ever wonder where traditions come from? They're carried on, traditions like Mother's Day, they're carried on by doing what we've always done. We know that part. I remember my nephew, we went out fishing. He was just a little guy, and we went to this place, and we fished that day, and he even caught a couple of fish, and it was down. We had just kind of been driving. We went down this back road and came to sort of a very windy path, and at the end of that was a place where we could fish. So he wanted to go there again, and so we took his cousin and a couple of others. We just wanted to go for the drive. We didn't care about the fishing, but he had his gear, and he came along, and we're on his way, and he gets so excited. He says, "This is where we always go fishing." He's been there once. But that's about all it takes for a tradition for kids, maybe a little longer when we're adults. But they're begun by people who feel the need to do something special, and then that thing that they are passionate about gets picked up by others, perhaps because it resonates with something that others are feeling as well. And I think that's really what, not just about Mother's Day, but a lot of the traditions that we see both in our churches as well as in our cultures. Before the Americanized version of Mother's Day, there was a Mothering Sunday that was observed in Great Britain from around the 16th century. And the early church had a Sunday where they honored Mary, Mother of Jesus, on the fourth Sunday of Lent. They had done that from way back. And around the 1600s, this was extended to honor all mothers. And so on the fourth Sunday of Lent, they went to church, they had prayers and a service there, and then they were encouraged to go and see their own mothers. Children brought gifts and flowers and so on. And that had been practiced for quite a number of years, but had all but died out by the 19th century, and then was rejuvenated after World War II when American servicemen brought the custom, the Americanized custom as we know it, to Britain again, and the commercialized enterprise was part of that because they were there to turn some coin and merchandise this thing called Mother's Day. And so the American version, if you look at that, and maybe I'm telling some of you stuff you know, but not everybody knows all this stuff because who looks it up, right? The American version was first suggested by Julia Ward Howe in 1872. Anybody recognize that name? Yeah, of the Gordie Howe clan. No. She wrote Battle Hymn of the Republic and other things. But she felt Mother's Day should be celebrated annually and it should be dedicated to peace. It was because Battle Hymn of the Republic was written in honor of the end of the Civil War. And so she wrote it, or she wanted this day to be celebrated, to celebrate mothers, but also to celebrate peace, you know, world peace. So, I mean, that world peace thing was going on a long time ago. But it was to be held the second Sunday of June. And this was done in some areas of the U.S. Later, a woman by the name of Ann Jarvis, who was an activist, she lobbied for official government recognition of Mother's Day. And while she had no children herself, she wanted to honor her mother, and she began by sending her mother's favorite flowers to the church that they had gone to in Grafton, West Virginia. And what kind of flowers do you suppose? Nobody from my family can answer this. What kind of flowers do you suppose she sent? What's that? No? Carnations. And that's why you see a lot of carnations on Mother's Day. I didn't know that. But, I'm cheap too. I bought Pam carnations, and they are kind of a cheap one. And they last a long time, so it's good value. But there was actually a connection with that. But she wanted to do that in honor of her mother. And through her hard work as a social activist, By 1914, Mother's Day was officially recognized in the U.S. at the government level to be observed on the second Sunday of May, which is the Sunday that we currently look at as Mother's Day to this present day. Since then, Mother's Day observations spread to a number of other countries, including Canada, and has been highly commercialized in the process, something that Anna Jarvis was deeply disturbed with and hurt by, because her intention was not that it be made a commercialized event, but an event that was more tied to what she wanted to do, which was to honor those that raise children and do it well. What is it about the connection between children and their mothers that resonated with so many, and so many who picked up the sentiment and the idea of honoring mothers in this way? And that's a rhetorical question. I'm not looking for an answer. I'm not going to necessarily give you a definitive answer, but I wonder about that, because there's lots of days have been suggested. Secretary's Day. Anybody know when Secretary's Day is? Give your pastor a Tim's card day. I'm going to start that one. Is it today? Well, next Sunday is give your pastor a Tim's card day. We've just declared it. Does that resonate? Does everybody rush out and get Tim's cards? I don't know. I doubt that it'll be a national or international thing. We all would like to feel safe and secure, physically, but more importantly, emotionally. There's not a one of us that wouldn't do better if we felt secure in who we are and in the people that are around us, that they love us and care about us. We all would like to feel that unconditional love that in the best cases happens with mothers and their children. I'm not saying that's the only place it happens, but it is one place that it does happen, sometimes in a very profound way. In most cases, mothers are the first to supply this in that they are the first to hold the infant after the birth. You come into this world, it's a cold and nasty place after being in the safety of the womb and all that, you know, sort of hot tub, warm water kind of thing going on there. All your needs are met. And then you come out, they snip the food supply, they spank you, and it's like, ah! And then they hand you to mom, and she holds the baby. And so as newborns, we're able to experience that. And when they are able, in a functional family situation, they continue to give us that sense of safety and protection and love during our formative years. Understanding that some mothers did not or could not do this, whether it's by choices they made or choices that others have made that they had no power over or very little power over, or through things completely beyond anyone's control, such as a disease or untimely death. And I would count mental illness in that category as well. There's people that just had mothers that couldn't care for them for whatever reason. And those are some of the situations that make it difficult on days like Mother's Day. Ultimately, though, the instinct, if you will, to nurture our young, which is found in nature as well as in the human family, was put there by God, in whose image we were created. Ultimately, God watches over us. While our mothers nurture us wherever possible, but especially when they do not or cannot. And I wanted to focus our thoughts a little bit on that aspect of it for a little bit. The fact that God is the one that watches over the mothers who watch over us and watches over us in their stead when they are absent for any reason. Isaiah chapter 49, verse 15. Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, though it is possible, I will not forget you. And there's been times certainly in our society and in times past where that would be a very rare thing, but now it seems to be more common, where society as a whole has become dysfunctional to a point where women can somehow block out that natural nurturing instinct. But God says, even if that happens, I will not forget you. And God has placed a high value on caring for those who are vulnerable, which includes children. But I mean, God expands that to lots of other situations where people are vulnerable. And at different times and in different types of societal systems, that included women whose husbands died or husbands divorced them. Usually husbands died in older times. And then they were left in a society that didn't make provision for that. And God says, you better take care of them. And so God commands us to defend the orphans and the widows. Psalm 82 and 3, where the psalmist writes, defend the cause of the weak and fatherless, maintain the rights of the poor and oppressed. And that encapsulates children that are at risk as well as others. And when we are in a situation where the natural family unit is disrupted for any reason, God says, you better take care of those kids. They are vulnerable. And so while he's put that instinct within mothers to do that, and when they are able and willing, they do that to the best of their ability, he still wants us to watch out for the kids because he has commanded it. And that's not only Old Testament, but it's also found in the New Testament, James chapter 1, verse 27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So not only in the Old Testament, we find this in the New Testament, that along with avoiding sinful behaviors, caring for orphans and widows, caring for the vulnerable, is considered the highest of godly virtues. He said, if you want your religion to mean something, take care of the people that are in trouble. Because otherwise it's just words. But more than just being in a place where God places that responsibility on us, God himself defends the vulnerable. Psalm 68 and verse 5. God leads by example, if you will. He said, I've commanded you to do this, but Psalm 68 and verse 5 declares, a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. And I think that's what Sherry was talking about this morning. When we need a family, God provides us a family. And he will take care of us. Psalm 27, verse 10, another verse that I want us to look at. And that same idea is captured there. Psalm 27 and 10 says, though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Again, it's that idea that even if the family unit breaks down, if the human system doesn't do what it's supposed to do, he says, even if your mother and father forsake you, he says, I'm watching out for you. And when people would dare to take advantage of those who are vulnerable, and there's horrible things going on in our world right now, the child trafficking in Europe is disturbing. There's a lot of vulnerable children, and they are making merchandise on them and picking them off the streets. Stuff like that goes on, has gone on throughout history. When people would take advantage of those who are vulnerable, and sadly, in a sin-damaged world, this does happen, God takes notice and encourages those in distressful situations. Psalm 10, verses 17 and 18. You hear, O Lord, the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them and listen to their cry. defending the fatherless and the oppressed in order that man who is of the earth may terrify no more. He hears their prayers. He hears their cries. And go back to Exodus chapter 22. Do not take advantage of a widow or an orphan. If you do, this is verse 23, if you do, and they cry out to me, I will certainly hear their cry. He's saying, don't mess with my kids. Don't mess with my girls. If they're in trouble and they cry out to me and you've taken advantage of them, you're going to deal with me. It'll happen either in this life or, actually, that would be better because you'd have a chance to do something about it, or it happens in the next. When you stand before God, don't think I want to be a person that took advantage of the vulnerable, because God takes a dim view of that. It's also good to remember, spiritually, we were all orphans and God adopted us as his own. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. Ephesians 1 and 4, for he chose us in him before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. In love, he predestined us to be adopted as his sons through Jesus Christ. And so God looked on our spiritual condition and saw that we were orphaned. The sin that had entered the world back in the garden and has germinated and produced a crop of sinful behavior that put a wall between us and God, to where we didn't have a heavenly father. He said, I'm going to fix that. He says, I'm going to adopt you into my family as equal with my son, Christ, who died for us and paid the price for all of those who would receive that gift. Now, in Isaiah 66, this is the last place I want us to focus on this morning. There's a message there that is directed to God's people in the last days before Christ's return, and specifically to Israel in parts of it. And somebody, I'm not saying I totally buy into this, but somebody did a very creative kind of commentary on Isaiah, saying that there's 66 chapters in Isaiah, and they related each of the 66 chapters to the 66 books of the Bible. And there are places where that fits really well, and this is one of them, because the whole of the last chapter of Isaiah talks about what's going to happen at the end of time when Christ returns. And so if you want to turn to Isaiah 66, last chapter of Isaiah, and he speaks specifically of Israel in verse 8, where he says, who has ever heard of such a thing? Who has ever seen such things? Can a country be born in a day, or a nation be brought forth in a moment? Yet no sooner is Zion in labor than she gives birth to her children. And if you wonder where that idea in prophetic understanding that Israel will turn to God and receive Christ as their Messiah in a day, this is one of the key verses in that understanding, that it's going to happen. There's going to be a day when they will say, this is the one who we pierced, and they will receive him. I don't know when in history that will happen, but it will happen close to the end of time as I understand it. But God goes on to speak to them in terms that are reminiscent of mothering and maternal nurture. Let's drop down to verse 12. For this is what the Lord says, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the wealth of nations like a flooding stream. You will nurse and be carried on her arm and dandled on her knees. As a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you. And you will be comforted over Jerusalem. And then he goes on, verses 14 and 15. When you see this, your heart will rejoice and you will flourish like grass. The hand of the Lord will be made known to his servants, but his fury will be shown to his foes. See, the Lord is coming with fire and chariots like a whirlwind. He will bring down his anger and fury. and his rebuke with flames of fire. Husbands, note that fire and fury part. Don't mess with the mother of your children. I know this is God and his judgment, but boy, have you ever heard of friendly fire? Yeah. Well, just remember that and treat your wives, especially if they have children, treat them well. That friendly fire can be not so friendly at times. And I say that in jest, but what I say is that what that says to me is that God is so passionate about his people that he says, if you're an enemy of my people, you're an enemy of me. And I don't think that's a wrong position for a mother to take when her kids are at risk. You mess with my kids, you mess with me. Earthly mothers were intended to be an extension of God's maternal love and care. And while they are imperfect, wherever they have made their best efforts, this is worthy of honor. Where mothers are absent, you may have known another nurturing person or people who have filled that role, even for a short time, if not for longer periods. Do what you can to honor the good that was done and allow God to make up for any differences. And that, I think, is a good thing to give that balance to the Mother's Day message. It's not about saying every mother was a saint and so perfect that, you know, you just have to lift them all up, because as we know, that's not always the case. Sometimes they did the best they could, given what they had to work with. And so rather than criticizing the things that weren't the best, look for those things that you can honor them for. If you have the ability to do that in person, that's a great thing. If you don't, lift up a prayer for them. And I'm going to finish this with a short video that talks about being a mother and what a difficult task that can be at times, but what a rewarding task it is, and how that God, I believe, will support us in that if we allow him to strengthen us for the journey. And so some of you are not in that category. You've raised your children. You didn't have that opportunity. Some of you haven't got there yet. I don't know where you're at, but I think for all of us, this, I just really appreciated this, because I thought about the trouble I gave to my mom when I was growing up. And she went through some difficult times. My dad died, left her with 6 kids, no source of income, and no resources. And there were days, that first year, she just kind of stared out the window, most days, because she was devastated and she was so overwhelmed. And then she kind of picked herself up and said, well, I guess I'll get on with life. And she got the best job she could get, and she managed to raise us as best she could. And it was later that I looked back and really appreciated that. Anyway, watch this, and then I will dismiss in, actually, I'm going to have Pam dismiss in prayer. I think on Mother's Day, she should do something as the mother of us all.
There are those who say that this is ordinary, but don't let that fool you. Mother will always be the bravest, least ordinary, most difficult, utterly challenging career that anyone ever hopes to lay claim to. While others might hear diaper changer, food maker, laundry doer, carpooler, bottle washer, sweatpants wearer, life on hold, wanna be doing anything else, woman. The truth is, whether it feels like it some days or not, you are in fact a shelter from the storm. You are a cape of good hope. You are a warrior who will do battle for your children's hearts, souls, attention, innocence, education, and memories. Go to battle, my friends. This is your time. We will hold strong on either side of you. We will pray for those bottles through the dark watches of the night. And when doubt comes and children break, when adults fail them, and when they push and push as hard against us as the day we delivered them into this world, we will not be broken. We may ache and see cracks tear through our hearts, but we will get up again tomorrow, and we will load the clothes and the words that need to be said again and again and again. And when the world tries to claw at them, to break them, to smash the beauty in them, may our walls hold true. May the lessons we've told, the truths we've lived, the life we've spoken into them come back easily, predictably, with wash and repeat ease. Kingdom business, Jesus work, this shaping of souls, this raising tiny humans. There are those that say this is ordinary. Don't buy it for a second. Mighty. You are mighty because you, Mother, are.